During the time American journalist Joseph Browdy was embedded with a detective unit in Casablanca, Morocco, they investigated what appeared to be a robbery gone wrong, where a night watchman was killed. Although the investigation ended when someone confessed to the murder, soon after, Mr. Browdy encountered the victim's best friend, who insisted that it was part of a larger conspiracy. In his new book, The Honored Dead, A Story of Friendship, Murder, and the Search for Truth in the Arab World, Mr. Browdy tells of his struggles to navigate through the complex cultural landscape of the Kingdom of Morocco in solving the crime. It's published by Spiegel & Grau, and I'm very pleased that it brings Joseph Browdy to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
Now, why did you want to embed with a detective unit in Morocco?
I wanted to embed in a detective unit in the Arab world because these governments are called police states, and the police is central to the machinery of the state. And you see it on the streets of nearly every Arab country today.
But Morocco is a constitutional monarchy, considered more liberal than most?
Yes, and perhaps that's one of the reasons they gave me this unusual access, because they felt that they had something to show off to the world.
So who did you have to go to, the United States to get permission, or just to the Moroccan government?
I went straight to the Moroccan government. There was no involvement from the U.S. in this. I approached several Arab governments, and the Moroccans were the ones who said yes.
And then they just said you can embed with a detective unit?
Yeah, there was some negotiation over which unit precisely. There are many different security services in Morocco. And this was the compromise. They're involved in grand crimes, a little bit of terrorism, and a whole lot of murder, extortion, and so on. And they investigate, so it was more than just uniformed police.
Have any journalists done this type of embedded reporting with police in foreign countries in the past?
Well, I don't know about police in other parts of the world, but I think this is so far unique in the Arab world, and I do hope that it will encourage other Arab governments to open up in the same way.
You speak Arabic?
Mm-hmm.
But Arabic has so many different accents. Doesn't Moroccan Arabic sound quite different than Egyptian Arabic?
It certainly does. Egyptian Arabic was well known all over the Arab world because of the Egyptian film industry. Morocco has a dialect that is quite different and a little hard to pick up, but I was there for some months and eventually I learned it.
But people recognized immediately that you were a foreigner.
Yes. My mom is an Iraqi Jew, as a matter of fact, and so I have a little bit of the Iraqi accent in me.
And did that matter? Did people, were they concerned when you revealed you were Jewish?
Morocco is an unusual country. It still has 3,000 Jews living in it.
3,000?
3,000
from a population. But it used to be hundreds of thousands.
Used to be 265,000, so that says a lot. But it is the largest Jewish community in the Arab world today. And so there is a kind of a spirit of tolerance that is cultivated by the government.
The country also has an interesting colonial history.
Mm-hmm. 40
you were in Casablanca, which was in the Spanish part of the old Morocco. The capital's in the former French colony.
Well, the French designated Casablanca as the economic capital of Morocco, and it remains that way today. There was a large French contingent. There were Germans there, many different countries, and some of them lingered on after the independence.
And what was your first impression of Casablanca when you arrived?
Well, I love Casablanca because it's a melting pot of cultures from all over Morocco, the Berber, the Arab, the Saharan, the Jewish, the Muslim. It's not the most beautiful city in Morocco. Marrakesh is a place where the medieval architecture is preserved. But linguistically, it's fascinating, and it's a very rich and a little mysterious.
And its name in Spanish means white house.
White house.
Are there a lot of white houses?
There are a lot of white houses. There are a lot of white, gray apartment complexes. And there is a historic old city as well. It's a little bit grittier than that of Marrakesh, which is more of a tourist hub.
Although you were a Westerner, do you think people on the street were more open to you because you spoke the language?
I think so, yeah. I mean, a combination of speaking the language and also being willing to spend an extended period of time with particular families.
Well, how were you received by the detectives that you were accompanying?
In a similar way, I mean, there was the personal friendship that was built up, but at the same time there was tension, creative tension, because they clearly wanted to make a particular type of impression on me, and it was my job to try and see what they might not have wanted me to see.
And were you impressed by the way they approached their jobs?
Yeah, overall, I was impressed. I mean, I did witness some brutality. There's a description early on in the book of a violent scene in a shanty town, but I also saw pretty good policing. I saw them teasing confessions out of people over tea and cake in a way that only people who know their own culture can do.
A policeman you followed during your time mentioned to you that he and other officers are not just police, but guardians of the social fabric. What did he mean by that?
I think they mean that authoritarian states in that region presume to be protecting the society from itself. When you have a society that's fractured along ethnic, sectarian, and cultural lines, there are conflicts that sometimes erupt. So in the instance of this particular murder that we were following, there was a lot of that, and it turned out that there was something of a cover-up that in part was based on a desire to maintain civil peace.
A cover-up because there were tribal conflicts?
Well, there was an ethnic issue because the victim was a Berber, which is an ancient ethnic group of North Africa.
And he was working at a warehouse that was owned by a Jew.
And he was working at a warehouse owned by a Jew. So you have Muslims and Jews embroiled in this. And the killer was not only an Arab but also a soldier in a new unit of the Moroccan army. So there were also concerns about the reputation of the military and not wanting to provoke the population's anger at a soldier who would kill a civilian on the street.
What is media coverage of an event like this like?
So it ties in with what you quoted about guardians of the social fabric, that the name of the victim, the name of the assailant, the cop, the judge are all blanked out of the media. The police explained this to me as in part a desire to protect the society from cycles of vengeance, particularly rural areas and among rural migrants into the cities. So that is something that's gradually changing in Morocco. There are independent journalists who have been pushing the limits, but it still is a taboo in Morocco and much of the Arab world.
But there's the internet, as we have seen in Tunisia and in all of the Arab Spring countries.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't people breaking those taboos left and right?
They certainly are. And in some countries, of course, we see enormous violence despite the possibility of videotaping it on a cell phone. Morocco, I think, is a country where they're concerned about the way things will look and how easy it is to broadcast it to the world inhibits violent behavior on the street to a significant degree.
My guest is Joseph Browdy, Braude. His book, The Honored Dead, A Story of Friendship, Murder, and the Search for Truth in the Arab World. So let's talk about this murder. What happened?
So the victim was a homeless man who had been squatting in this warehouse for 5 years. And as you mentioned, the police said it was a robbery gone wrong. The killer was a soldier half his age.
And they knew the killer from the start?
Not from the start. It was actually a 4 or 5 day investigation, which is a long time in Casablanca, they were proud to say. And they found him through DNA evidence. They managed to connect his blood with blood that they found elsewhere in a hospital. And it proceeded from there. So there was not a question of who did it. The question was why. And that question was an obsession for the victim's best friend, whom I met trying to broaden my inquiry into this murder and the context of it.
Do you see cultural influences on the way the police handled the case?
Well, the Moroccan policing is built along the lines of the French policing. The designations are the same: DST, Public Intelligence Police, Judiciary Police. But I think the main one of the important differences is that Morocco is a poor country, and so the court system is beleaguered, and in effect, justice is brokered within the halls of the police precinct.
What was the reason given for the murder?
The reason that was given was that it was a robbery gone wrong.
By a member of the police?
By a member of the Moroccan army that was now serving a kind of an urban policing role. He was from a rural area not too far from Casablanca. The police said that he had escaped or left the barracks in order to steal. And his own version of the story is quoted in the confession, said that he was running away from some drunk boys on the train tracks, and he climbed the wall and all kinds of other things. His story changed over time. But Muhammad Barry, who was the individual who had been the victim's friend of 10 years, just smelled something different.
And did he convince you that there was something wrong with the way the police had handled the case?
I was moved by his conviction that something else was going on. And I felt that it was worth exploring with him, also because it was an interesting way of checking up on what the police were telling me, an independent investigation that could be sort of balance the official story.
And what was Muhammad Barry telling you might have happened?
His initial theory was that it must have something to do with either drug cartels, which are prominent in Morocco, or terrorism. He was convinced that the victim knew something that put him in danger. Why he had this theory initially, it sounds like a function of the headlines in Morocco, screaming headlines about the apprehension and busting of drug cells and the Moroccan government's keen interest in liquidating terrorists.
So you and Muhammad Barry conducted your own private investigation?
That's right. We went
all. Did the cops like the fact that you were doing that?
I think that over time they grew less and less comfortable with it. At first it was kind of something that I justified as a sociological exploration of the context of the killing, and they liked that. But, you know, eventually they tried to discourage me from doing it, and they did warn Muhammad Barry to stop doing it, and so it became a little tense as we moved along in this investigation.
And where did you go to investigate this death?
A lot of this happened in Casablanca, but we were all over the country. We went to an agricultural plateau called Bin Sleiman, which is where the soldier's family was from. We kind of got run out of town there. We were in Jadida, which is a center of migration of the Berber from the rural south. I went as far south as the victim's birthplace. We were in Marrakesh and pursuing both friends of the victim through mosques where he prayed and the Jewish owners of the warehouse in synagogues all over Casablanca.
Did you ever get to speak to the murderer? Or alleged murderer?
The confessed murderer. I'm convinced that he was the killer. He's since been sentenced. And no, I did not. I was not permitted access to him. It's perhaps instructive that I wasn't. But I went to his father and his brothers and people who knew him.
Well, after you researched the case and spoke with a number of people, did your understanding of the murder differ from the official police report's conclusions?
It certainly did. We learned first that the victim was not the pious and traditional sort of person whom Muhammad Barry, his best friend, believed he had been. He had been flirting with an Islamist preacher, listening to his sermons and a Walkman when he was younger. And he went on to experiment with ancient North African magic. He had been practicing rituals that are derided as satanic magic by Muslim conservatives in the warehouse in the dead of night.
How did Muhammad Barry react to those revelations?
That and other revelations were personally troubling to Barry. I mean, it actually caused a crisis for Barry because he learned that his friend had been hiding all these things from him, things that, as a conservative Muslim himself, Barry might not have countenanced if he knew that his friend was up to all this stuff. And so over time, he came to doubt himself, to ask why he was pursuing this, whether his friend merited this type of a dangerous pursuit. So there was also tension inside Barry, and our friendship evolved along those lines.
There were also rumors about the nature of the relationship between Ibrahim Day and Muhammad Barry.
Yes. Without going into every detail about that, they had a relationship. That was something the police denied, and it was a stigmatized relationship, a taboo that had caused great unrest in other contexts. And the more we learned about it, the more we understood why police were covering it up. And that was self-doubt on my part. I started to wonder whether maybe the police were right to cover it up under the strained circumstances.
Do you think you solved the case?
No, I mean, this, as Raymond Chandler said, it's not the neat symmetry of fiction, but the tangled woof of fact. So we didn't have complete closure. We learned a whole lot about what happened that night, why it might have happened. But in the end, we still have questions.
Although I think that your point here is that you also learned a lot about Moroccan society, Moroccan culture.
Yes. I mean, there are departures into the history and culture of Morocco. There's music. Among the people who helped us along the way was the most famous rock band in North Africa, Nassal Riwan, who happened to have met each other in the shanty town in the precinct where I was based, and they gave advice on which rocks to look under.
A caller wonders, are there many Christians in Morocco?
Interestingly, Morocco is a country that has rich Muslim and Jewish histories, and as well as ancient shamanist practices that you find all over the African continent, but not a history of indigenous Christianity like you find elsewhere.
Well, did any of the French colonists remain?
Yes, and there are churches, and there are French living there, and more Europeans treat Marrakesh as a suburb of France, buying out beautiful old homes and restoring them.
You co-wrote an op-ed piece with Ahmed Charaï. Is it Charaï, Charaï?
Charaï.
That appeared in yesterday's New York Times.
Yeah, this
what
morning.
What was the point you were trying to make?
Well, I had a chance to go back to Morocco and spend time observing the constitutional referendum. So the king, in a departure from what other Arab leaders have been doing in response to the demonstrations, offered essentially to split the difference with the population and have an elected, or more or less an elected prime minister who would have domestic authorities, appointment of ministers and so on, while the king maintains religious authority and control over the army and intelligence services.
Well, his father was a rather tyrannical ruler.
Yes.
We've had people here talking about some terrible things that happened, unfair imprisonments, etc. When he ascended to the throne, the new king was described as a Western-educated liberal. But it doesn't sound to me like the country's become all that liberalized.
No, I think the country has improved, certainly on its civil rights record, human rights record. The former king killed hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and they were called the Years of Lead when he ruled. And one of the first things that the new king did was have what he called a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, modeled along the lines of the South African post-apartheid one, where the government...
Despite the fact that it revealed things about his own father?
Essentially, yes. I mean, he permitted that. He understood that the population needed that in order to begin the healing process. And so victims of his father's brutality were acknowledged and compensated. They had a chance to tell their stories on Moroccan television.
Didn't the country also suffer a brain drain because people left and went to France?
Certainly. The history of Morocco in the 20th century includes a lot of migration, and also Jews left the country in large numbers, in part due to the nature of the regime and for other reasons. And brain drain is a problem, but now it's possible for Moroccans to reconnect, and a lot of people want to come back.
Joseph Browdy's book, The Honored Dead, A Story of Friendship, Murder, and the Search for Truth in the Arab World, is published by Spiegel and Grau. Are you in touch with Muhammad?
I visited him last week. He's doing all right.
Thank you so much for being with us.